Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
All right, all right, all right. I'm Josh Eberle. I'm your host. It's Monday night. We're talking NBA Finals. We finally reached the summit. I'm joined tonight by, always, the Scottie Pippen to my MJ, Snotty Drippin, and Justin Rowan from FearTheSword.com. Thanks for coming on tonight with us. Justin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Snotty, how you doing?
What's up, fellas? I'm ready for this thing to start.
So, last week on the show, Snotty and I were a little bored. The conference finals were over so dang quick. We got a little ahead of ourselves. We were talking some NBA finals. We each kind of gave our prediction. Like everyone in the world, we're leaning to the Warriors. Justin, he's a Cleveland guy, he's a Cleveland writer. Well, he's a Canadian boy, first and foremost. That's why he's on the show. But we brought him on to kind of level us out. Just your initial thoughts on the finals. You put up a piece today on FearTheSword.com. What's your big thing to look for early on in the series?
Well, I mean, obviously going into the finals, I do agree with you guys. I do think Golden State should be the favorite. Personally, if I had to put a number on it, I'd probably give them about a 70% chance of winning. Basically, if the kind of a point of emphasis, though, with the series, if the Cavs do want to have a chance, is they got ugly the series up a little bit. I mean, that's what they did against Chicago. It's what they did against Atlanta. When you're shorthanded without Kevin Love and you have a Kyrie Irving that's not 100%, you can't expect to operate at the same offensive clip that you've been operating at basically since the trades at the middle of the season. So you want to ugly things up. You want to not play dirty, of course, but kind of slow the game down, keep it close, and hope that LeBron's enough to come away and steal a win at the end of a close game. I don't think you can really get into a shootout with a team that really outguns them.
So, not any quick thoughts on the series that you didn't say last week?
I'm a little concerned. I'm being outnumbered by Canadians right now, 2-1 on the podcast. I'm feeling a little perturbed. I don't really feel safe here, but I respect our man, Mr. Rowan, for actually being an intelligent, reasonable fan, because a lot of the bloggers and fans of the Cavs right now are you crazy? Somebody tweeted me, are you crazy? J.R. Smith can't be every bit as good as Clay Thompson. You know, this is real. He was, you saying Shumpert cannot play Harrison Barnes for four games? I'm like, what basketball you been watching, man? I mean, it is what it is, right? The West has been stronger than the East. The Warriors have been stronger than the Cavs. So,
yeah, I mean, Klay Thompson got a concussion. He didn't get decapitated. To expect J.R. Smith to consistently outperform Klay in a series is probably not realistic.
That's interesting, because I feel like if you could just decapitate J.R. Smith sometimes, take his head out of the game, he might actually be a better player. On your piece that you wrote today, Snotty and I were talking about it before the show, and you mentioned your step one on the Cavs, tips to win the series. You say guard Steph Curry with Kyrie Irving. And as soon as I read that, I was like, this is crazy. But, you warn us. You tell us to think about it. You just want to, work us through that logic for those people who maybe haven't read your piece?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I don't think you can realistically hide Kyrie on Klay Thompson or Harrison Barnes. They both have really great length for perimeter players, and I think once you do that, you're going to risk post-up with those players, and it's going to throw the whole defense out of whack. My whole theory was that if you put Irving on Curry, it's going to put good defenders on every other position. You got Shumpert on Klay Thompson, you got LeBron on Barnes, Thompson on Green, and Mozgov on Bogut. So your hope is that with favorable defensive matchups, I guess you could say arguably, that Curry would be forced to be in attack mode, certainly with a wounded Kyrie Irving in front of him. Whether that be beating him off the dribble, which would be relatively easy given how much trouble Irving had staying in front of guys like Jeff Teague, guys that don't have as creative of a dribble as Curry, might lead to him penetrating more. So you almost drive him off the three-point line with a more tempting look. And with him being taking the bulk of the offense, you hope that it takes other guys out of the offense. Curry's got a very balanced offensive attack where he looks to get himself shots and other guys shots. But when if he's just in scoring mode all the time, that's going to take guys on his team out of the game. You don't give them open looks. You don't let them get into rhythms. So they might be not ready to answer the bell when they are called upon.
It's been a big topic of conversation this year, specifically with the Cavs struggling early and LeBron getting up there in age a little bit. And now, obviously, with the Warriors playing as well as they have and going into the finals, is LeBron's crown in jeopardy? If the Cavs lose in the finals and Steph Curry is the best player on the court, is LeBron still going to be walking into the league next year as the de facto best player, or are we looking at an open league? Why don't you go first, Snotty?
First, I want to say I really like Justin's plan. It makes sense. I like it in theory about, you know, kind of sacrifice Kyrie on Steph. The problem with that is we know Steph's a very cerebral player. And, well, two things. One, he's a very cerebral player, so I don't think he's going to just start jacking him up or taking him to the hole all day. And the second thing is, you know, with Kyrie's, he doesn't have a lot of reach, and he's not really a top-notch defender. So, I mean, Steph can give him a couple in-and-out moves, double up, and he's pulling up again. And that's the shot he wants. You know, if he can get the shot he wants against a weaker defender, he's going to get the shot he wants. So that's a little troublesome. But I like the idea. It's kind of like when I think a big thing that Golden State needs to do is don't double LeBron. Let LeBron go for 45-50 in the post, wherever he wants to get it. Let Harrison Barnes you're tying them up to the stakes and serving them up to the basketball guys, but, you know, you do that and stay at home with the shooters. So, but as far as LeBron's legacy, I hate that this quick news cycle and the instantaneous reaction we have to media that they're already talking about it, you know, because right now LeBron is two for four in the finals. He'll be, am I right? He'll be two for five after this one. If they, right.
What's that?
Bron's record in the finals right now.
He's 2-3 right now. He's been to 5. So if they lose this one, he would be 2-4.
There we go. So, yeah, the fact that people are already discussing that, you know, and the fact that people are already saying, oh, well, in a way, it's kind of true. Because we know that the greatest ever is Michael Jordan, considered by many. And the fact that he went 6-6 makes it, you know, a tough hill to climb. Like, even if LeBron was 3-4 and went 4-5 right now. People say, oh, MJ was 6-6. He didn't lose in the finals. It's weird how that's weighted against LeBron that he lost in the finals. Well, MJ never lost the finals, but LeBron lost in the early rounds a lot more. So it's kind of it's sad. To me personally, though, no, LeBron's legacy is intact. He's already leapfrogged a lot of your favorite players. He's already ahead of that 24 guy from L.A. He's already pretty much cemented top five status to me, and it's all about how high he climbs towards number one. But to me, Michael Jordan is always going to be the greatest, just for the fact that not just the legacy, his also his narrative, you know, the way he's viewed by other players, I think. So,
Before you hop in, Justin, I wasn't so much referring to his legacy. I think that's a great conversation to have, you know, in the off season. But I meant more so when you look at this series. Who scares you more, Steph Curry or LeBron? Because LeBron's just been the best player by default in the NBA for a few years now. I wonder, like, specifically, not his legacy, but the title of the NBA's best player at this given moment. Is that up for grabs?
Yeah, go ahead, Justin. Take that one.
I think it might be a little up for grabs to an extent. I think what we've seen out of LeBron over the past couple seasons is him saving himself a lot during the regular season. You'll see him operate at about 70%. He doesn't particularly play a lot of defense in the regular season unless he has to or it's a marquee matchup. I think there's always going to be kind of the sentiment that he is the best player in the game as long as he continues to elevate himself in those moments where it matters. there's always going to be a discussion of it. But, I mean, I thought, obviously, Steph Curry's MVP season was well-deserved, and I thought he was the player that should have got it because he was more consistent throughout the regular season. And I think down the road you're going to continue to see other guys step up and have monumental seasons, whereas LeBron is going to operate at that level where he's at 70%, take over where he has to, and put himself in the best position to be physically right once the finals come around or once the playoffs come around, because he knows, as Snotty brought up, he's chasing Jordan's legacy. While he's never going to match the perfect record at this point, he can at least continue getting to those finals and hope that he can accumulate enough appearances and hopefully victories as a Cavs fan. I'd like to see those. But I think that's the priority for him rather than asserting himself as the 82-game best player in the league.
Fair. Real quick. Snotty, do you want to go back? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Let me take a mulligan on that. I'm going to say yes, with a caveat. I think a lot of people, out of sight, out of mind, I've seen the question about how is Steph Curry the most dominant offensive player since blah, blah. We talked about this, I think, a little last week, right? And I think a lot of people kind of forgot about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is the, right there again, challenging. And like you said, LeBron is, I think, entering that 96 to 98 MJ stage of his phase of his career where he's maybe not quite as physically dominant, and he does kind of coast, and he realizes he has to conserve energy because he just can't do what he did back in 2007, 2008. But mentally, he seems a lot sharper, and he seems a lot more confident in his skills and what he's doing. So what he's lacking physically, yeah, you hit a nail on the head. What he's lacking physically, maybe, he makes up for with just smarts. And honestly, he really gutted out the Chicago series in a way I didn't think LeBron really could do over a sustained period. So I'm impressed by how he's playing.
Yep.
In regards to Curry, Scott Robb, well-known Cleveland guy, writing a second book about LeBron, the legacy, Cleveland sports, his own life. He was giving me the gears the other day because I wanted to start talking about Steph Curry's legacy a little bit. And I know I'm jumping the gun. I know he's young. But I was looking at the stats. If the Warriors win the championship and Steph Curry wins the finals MVP, which he is the favorite to do so on paper right now, he'd be only the 11th player to win the MVP and finals MVP in the same season, and he'd be only the second point guard other than Magic Johnson. That's pretty incredible. And I know people always love the new player, the new superstar. He's kind of the media darling right now. I'm not trying to overhype that. I just think that's pretty historic, and it's something we haven't really seen. Thoughts on that, Justin?
No, I completely agree. And I've kind of reflected the sentiment a few times throughout the season, and I wish Irving was healthy for this, but you kind of look at Steph Curry as being, that would be the ideal for Kyrie Irving. Like that is, and that was actually something David Zavac, on our manager on Fear the Sword, wrote about today, that should be the standard he strives towards. I think people like to compare Steph Curry to Nash. I think in regards to efficiency, purity of the shot and stuff like that. But really, Steph Curry's the first Steph Curry. He's an exciting below-the-basket player that can create a shot from anywhere. And I think what he has accomplished is really special. And, I mean, thank God he was able to get over those health concerns earlier on in his career. He's thought of as a shooting guard earlier on. He was able to kind of hone his abilities as a playmaker as well. Took massive strides on defense, something that we didn't see out of Nash. I don't think it's too premature to start thinking about Curry and his legacy. Obviously, he's still fairly young at 27, but what he's doing is special. And at this rate, he seems to be someone that is going to create kind of a Hall of Fame type career.
Snotty, go ahead.
I agree, man. It's funny because it's that weird nebulous time in his career where he's right in his prime, but he's doing historic things, and he's already doing things we've never seen before. I can see the Nash comparison, but it's almost like if you had Steve Nash's shooting with Steve Nash's intelligence in shooting with Allen Iverson's aggression, but not the athleticism. Because the guy is, I mean, consistently pressuring the defense as soon as he steps across half court. And so, yeah, definitely it's already started time to think. I hate that when people say, oh, it's too early to start thinking about, is he the best shooter ever? It's too early because he needs to do it for more. Yeah, I understand the longevity part of Ray Allen and Reggie Miller, but this guy is, I mean, I don't care if he went – became a 38% shooter for the next 4 years. He's still better than them, career-wise. If you've seen that. But my point is, players don't do that. You know, he's not going to shoot this well, and then all of a sudden become a 37% three-point shooter. And they go, "Oh well, see, you crowned the best player ever 4 years ago, and now look what shooter ever, and now look what happened." That's just not how it goes. So I mean, just pure shooting ability. We've never seen anything like this. And so yes, his name is already pretty much. You can pencil him in for the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that gets confused all the time is longevity versus prime. Steph Curry is having the best postseason as a three-point shooter ever. It doesn't matter that it's only one playoffs. If he never played again, it wouldn't take away from the greatness of this season, at least in my eyes. And I think that kind of gets lost in translation. People see that differently and come from different angles. But we could talk about Curry and LeBron far longer than this half-hour show would allow us. But one of the role players on the Cavs is kind of getting a lot of heat over the last 2 weeks, partly because we have no basketball to watch or talk about. I'm still a little bitter. Thank the Lord for Game of Thrones. I hope you guys are fans of that show. Matthew Dellavedova. Is he dirty? Is he scrappy? Is he a hustle guy? There's a lot of words being thrown out, and I think you said earlier, Snoddy, and no one really knows how to feel about this guy. Do we like him? Do we not like him? Is this the...
I know how to feel.
Hard basketball. Okay.
I know how to feel. I hate Matthew Dellavedova. I hate his guts. I've become to hate Matthew Dellavedova the way I almost hated the Spurs, except it's more personal. Because I had someone sit in Twitter and tell me the other day that I was wrong. He's the best backup. He's so inspirational. He's always making the right plays. He could start for most teams in the NBA. And it got to the point, yeah, this is what people are telling me, man. So I get it. I get that every team needs a guy like this. He's almost like a Bill Laimbeer personality where he's irritant. He's the guy that they hope other teams get distracted by the crap he's doing. So I get it. If he was on my team, would I love him? No, probably not because of his smug little face. I still want to smack him. So, but I get it, and he's very valuable. He's a lot more valuable than I thought he would be. So I do tip my hat. I thought he was pretty much useless for most of the season, but LeBron worked that magic, man. He's become a huge part of these wins in the postseason. So, like, I hate it.
Justin, yeah, before you go, revise that.
Yep.
Let's revise that. A lot of people don't know how to feel about Matthew Dellavedova. Snoddy knows how to feel. Justin, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'm going to address the is he a dirty player thing. I don't think he acts with any malicious intent at all. I don't think there is intent to injure with him. I think he's a reckless player in a lot of ways, and he's someone that's willing to sacrifice his body all the time, which is why he's in the league. I mean, he was an undrafted player, a good undrafted pickup by the Cavs altogether, I guess you could say that. Notions of him being a starting player or an elite backup are insane. He's actually more of a shooting guard than he is a point guard. He doesn't really have much dribbling ability or playmaking ability. He can throw a pass, but he's not someone that can drive and create. He defends and he shoots. That's his two things. And last year, we saw a two-month stretch where he completely forgot how to shoot three-pointers. He was in the 20s in percentage. We saw a similar slump this season where, I was tweeting out that they should deport him. a lot of Cavs Twitter didn't like him. He's kind of made a name for himself in this postseason, but, realistically, he's probably a third-string combo guard option on a lot of teams. I know I'm kind of campaigning for them to go after Corey Joseph this summer. But I don't think he's a dirty player, but I think he's been a little overvalued this postseason, even though I do like his overall contributions.
Preach, brother, preach.
I'm not going to bite it and keep going on this because I think you guys kind of covered the spectrum on how to feel about it. I want to talk about another Curry, not Steph Curry, not Del Curry, not any other Curry that's playing basketball, but Riley Curry. And I'm sorry to have to do this. I'm sorry that we're talking about it on the podcast. But I felt like a villain the other day when I tweeted out that I wasn't a fan of the kids at the press conferences at the end doing the post-game interviews. Am I a bad guy for feeling like this? Or where do you guys stand on the whole, yes, the kids are cute, but do we want them sitting on dad's knee when the media is trying to do their job? Go ahead, Snot.
Yeah, you're terrible. Where's your Canadian heart there? Come on, man.
you got to
enjoy the fun stuff.
Canadians can't shoot Canadians like that.
Oh. I mean,
I know I'm from friendly Manitoba, but I'll swing some bows if you're going to go after the kids.
There you go, man. Oh, no. You're supposed to be so polite as a country, and look at you, man. What's going on with you, Josh? So I think so. You're kind of an ogre right now. Because, I mean, this is my thing. The whole NBA is what? It's a business, sure, and the writers have a job to do, and the professionals, and serious, blah, blah. It's all entertainment, man. It's all about entertainment. And if the fans are getting what they like when they get to watch that kid, I mean, it's huge, right? I mean, it's pretty much gone viral. It's a big thing, and I think it not only brings in maybe a casual fan, because now you got somebody's 45-year-old Aunt Elsa who's like, ooh, that little cute girl with Steph Curry. And it's a nice story. And so, yes, mm-hmm. I get writers have deadlines, and I get that, you know, they want to hear, I guess they think Steph Curry can tell them something about physics or, I don't know, help cure cancer with this important quote. It's all about entertainment. And if Divine is better than the soundbite, I'm all for it. I think the NBA is all for it. Only people who are upset are certain writers and certain Canadians.
Yeah, I mean, really, at the end of the day, sports is escapism, and it's supposed to be fun, right? I think people get away from that a little too frequently. I think reporters should have more of a problem with LeBron, J.R. Smith, Shumpert, and those guys in the hot tub popping champagne while they're sitting there waiting for them to get to the table than having a kid there present while Curry's answering questions. I mean, you think that would be more of an annoying delay for their deadlines than the cute kid or whatever. Like, I get the frustration, but again, it's the entertainment industry. You got to have some room for fun there.
I was hoping one of the two of you would have come with me, would have gotten the raft, could have gone out together, but now I'm feeling like Tom Hanks in Castaway, and I don't have Wilson with me, I got nobody with me, and let's not have kids in the press conference boat. That's okay. You know, I'll wear the villain hat for a little while. It's not he usually wears it. It's pretty heavy on my head, but I'll own it. Let's move on. Let's not focus on me as the villain. Let's not focus on me at all. Let's talk about something Rick Bucher has said today. Rick Bucher is a fun guy to villainize often. He said that Cleveland's season is already a win, and everything after this point is gravy on his radio show today. And I just don't know if I'm a Cleveland fan who hasn't seen a championship in however many years. I really believe that. Justin, do you believe that? Is this season already a win?
I mean, that's my opinion. I went all high school yearbook after they clinched berth into the finals. I was thanking people on Twitter. That was exciting for me. Realistically, like I said, Golden State has to be the favorite. They're the better team by a fair bit. I think Cleveland does have a realistic shot to come away with a title if everything breaks right. But after the Kevin Love injury, given the context of what's going on with Kyrie Irving, even LeBron, Shumpert are banged up. Shumpert's got that groin injury he's been battling since the Chicago series. I think when you look at the context of this season, if there was a healthy Kevin Love, I would completely disagree. It would be absolutely a title expectation. But without that, Irving being banged up, I think you take this, and it's a building block for next year. You've had the emergence of solid role players in Tristan Thompson, Mozgov, Shumpert. Like, those are guys that you can build forward with. You've got a young nucleus. I think it's gravy from here on.
Snotty,
yeah,
what do you think?
I'm going to agree with you again, man, because I think if we move the goalposts around, you would say, oh, if they lose in the final. Of course, you're disappointed if you lose, no matter what. But let's don't forget, in the preseason, LeBron made a big deal of saying that, hey, I'm here for the long term. You know, I'm not expecting to turn this around in 1 year. This is going to be an ongoing process. And they fell behind that schedule a little bit when they were 19-20. And they got those, you know, got JR and Shump and Mozgov, and they look like world beaters. So, you know, of course, you know, and then look where they are now. They're in the finals. So that's, you know, it's not quite a coin flip because Golden State's still the favorite. But that's a successful season. You can't look at a season where, you know, you blow through the best teams in the East, a little watered down, injuries, whatever you say, but they're injured also. So, of course, it's a success. If you move the goalposts and you look at, you know, because people keep saying, oh, well, you know, they have LeBron. All right, they do have LeBron, but he's a little older, and the team is not quite up right now, not 100% healthy. So this team, it's definitely been a successful season.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I agree with a lot of your guys' reasoning, but I just don't, when the chips are out and the Warriors scoop up that trophy and LeBron walks off the court and the Cavs walk off defeated, if that's how it goes, I just don't think that's how the majority will see it. And I guess we'll have to wait and see. And Justin, hopefully they don't lose so that I don't have to have you on the show, you know, sad, weepy version of yourself. Before we get out of here, we're down to our last couple minutes, unfortunately. We asked some people today to give us their takes on, you know, who was going to win and why. And so I got a few of those here. I'm going to go with at AL Day Everyday 1. And he says, Cavs in five because no one can guard LeBron, and Kyrie is going to expose Golden State with their inability to keep up with him. Does he know something that we don't know about Kyrie, or he's got some MJ secret stuff? Is he healthy, or is he just hopeful?
I think, has Kyrie been hanging out with Ray Lewis or something? Is he getting that deer antler spray?
Wow.
No, but... Cavs in five seems a little ambitious. I'll say this. I think if the Cavs were to win the series, it'd be in six. But, I mean, five seems early, especially against a team like Golden State.
Fire off another one. Snotty, you can take this one. Joseph Mercurio 7 says, Warriors in seven because of home court advantage, and Steph Curry cannot and will not be stopped. Is that pretty much the general sentiment?
I mean, that's very simplistic. I think that Golden State is deeper, a little more talented in more positions. And while LeBron is definitely, you know, he has an advantage in his spot, I think Golden State has an advantage almost every other spot. So I'm going to say, actually, I think Golden State in six. But I wouldn't be surprised if it goes seven because LeBron is just playing that well right now. But, yeah, I mean, it boils down to your MVP is going to play the MVP. Everybody else going to follow along.
At Rob Ortiz, 21, says, Cavs in five, LeBron's too good for finals rookies. Does LeBron going to the finals and having that experience make a big difference? Do you guys believers in, like, the finals experience? Is it different than the rest of the playoffs experience? What do you think, dude? Justin?
I don't really subscribe to that a whole lot. I think LeBron's league experience overall is going to be an advantage. As Snotty said earlier, I don't think there's a lot of players that are as cerebral as him. But I don't think that that's something that's contagious for the rest of the Cavs. It's a team sport. Basketball is a team sport. Gone are the days where one player can completely drag a team to the playoffs like they used to. I mean, Cleveland's got great contributions from the bench and stuff like that. But I just can't subscribe to that.
Snotty, what do you think? Is there a difference between playoff and finals experience? Does that matter here or no?
It does, but it doesn't because, once again, I think Golden State just has the overwhelming talent and discipline advantage. I think we're going to see some cracks from J.R. Smith here soon in the bright lights, and they're going to just run out of gas a little bit. They've been rolling. Hey, real quick, I want to say my man at Real Bob Manning, he wanted to say keep an eye out for that Mozgov and Bogut matchup. That's going to be a big thing to watch for.
Mm-hmm. Who, real quick, we're almost out of time. Who has the edge in that matchup? Each of you go real quick.
Mozgov.
I got to go Bogut.
Okay.
Right on.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, for tweeting us today. I'd love to get all your takes up on the air. Justin, thanks so much for coming on. You can find Justin at fearthesword.com. He's on Twitter at Cavs Anada. He's a good Canadian boy. Give him a follow. He doesn't always shoot at fellow Canadians. Snotty, you know, he's sometimes a good follow. If nothing else, he'll get you laughs. Thank you, everybody. We'll be here tomorrow with Jacob.
Shout out to my man B Billions out there. Thank you, my brother, for listening, man. Y'all pass it around.
All right. Thank you, everybody.